Birmingham Sports.
Hello again and welcome to Verulam Sport Podcasting. And it was an amazing French Open at the weekend. Won in the men's perspective yet again for Nadal, claiming a record 13th French Open. And then a youngster at the other end of her career trajectory, Polish teenager Iga Swiatek, claims the female championship. But lots of stories, fascinating competition. And now to discuss it all, I'm delighted to be joined on the line by John Meredith from Batchwood Tennis Centre. John, how are you? Keeping all right?
Hi there, Tony. Yeah, very well, thank you. Nice to speak to you today.
Always a pleasure, John. And I tell you what, goodness me, what a fascinating French Open it was. Much later than it usually is, the French this year, for understandable reasons. But there's one constant in France, isn't there? And that is you back against Mr. Nadal at your peril. Goodness me. A record 13th French Open, equaling Federer's record of 20 slams. Only twice has he ever suffered defeat at Roland Garros. What an unbelievable record that is.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think Andy Murray's quick to come out and say that, you know, whether that'll ever be repeated again, 13 titles at one Grand Slam is, you know, incredible. I think when Bjorn Borg did six, people yep. were sort of hailing that. And this is obviously more than double that amount. Classy from Federer to congratulate him quickly as well. But yeah, interestingly, back against him at your peril. Yeah, I had Djokovic this year, as you know, because... I felt the conditions were sort of heavier, the balls were heavier, and it played slower, but he was just, you know, imperious. I think he sort of really didn't give him an inch, did he, right from the very, very start. And by the time he found some form, it was, you know, two sets to love down already. So incredible, yeah.
Absolutely. But do you know what? My goodness me, Djokovic has only defeated 2020 up until the final. Was that kind of... when he was disqualified at the US recently. So the guy was on real form and looking very strong. So it wasn't a bad shout by any means. Of course, Djokovic himself had 17 slams, but as you say, Nadal was supreme. We'll come back to Nadal. Just want to go to a young woman at the other end of her career trajectory. Polish teenager, 19 years of age, Iga Swiatek, becomes the lowest ranked woman to claim the French Open after beating America's Sofia Kenin on Saturday. She's a former junior Wimbledon champ, so obviously has the pedigree, but I guess also no one really saw this one coming.
No, that's right. I mean, I think also there was a qualifier, Argentinian with a sort of East European surname. She got through to the semis. There was some sort of slightly unusual or unheard of people coming through, weren't there? But I think she won the whole event without dropping a set. There was some quite big names that she beat, sort of Halep she beat in straight sets. I actually saw her, I went to the Junior Fed Cup in... I think it was 2016, and I saw her out there then, and you know, people were saying she was a good player, but she wasn't the one everyone was raving on about to watch. I mean, but you know, she just, I think with her, she had such a sort of variety to her game. She's able to kick it up, she's able to hit it hard, she's able to slice it, drop shots. She had real variety, and yeah, she was on a roll, wasn't she? And deservedly won it. Yeah.
Absolutely. But again, ranked just 54 in the world. That's the lowest ranked woman to claim a French Open all time. And another bit of history for her. She becomes the first player from Poland to win a Grand Slam title and the youngest French Open women's champ since Monica Seles way back in 1992. So she smashes open a whole array of kind of records there, record-breaking performance from her. What I'm fascinated about, we're talking about the great era of men's tennis. And it is phenomenal. We are going to come back to that. But what's fascinating, I think, by contrast, is just how very open the women's game is these days. I think Swiatek becomes the ninth woman, to win her first maiden Grand Slam in the last 14 months. So obviously we spoke, haven't we, about Serena desperately chasing down 23 Slam, and I'm still convinced she will get there. But since she's faded away a touch, it really is an open game and very, very, very competitive indeed. And I think that kind of contrast with the kind of supreme elements, maybe the greatest we've ever experienced in the men's game, and this very open phase kind of free-for-all almost in the women's game really highlights the true beauty of tennis. I think tennis generally at the moment is in a very healthy place for those two divergent reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, on the ladies' side, you're starting to see a sort of changing of the guard now, aren't you, really? I mean, so Serena was very, very dominant for a number of years. And last year or two, that hasn't, you know, that's slightly faded away. But I think that's exciting. You know, Swiatek coming through. You had Anisimova started to come through last year. And then, you know, Kenin's obviously won her first sort of Grand Slam. I think, you know, Halep's towards the top, but she's relatively recent as well compared to, you know, the likes of Serena Williams. So Ashley Barty as well, she came through in the last couple of years. So we're starting to see a new generation kind of scrap it out, which I find, you know, really interesting. I think it's nice to sort of see not such dominance. I mean, when the side, there's not one dominant player, is there, really, you know, across the whole year. It's across three of them, really, or two or three of them now. So there's always that. But you know, before it was pretty sure that Serena was gonna win, you know, a big percentage of the time. So, yeah, I always find this, it's always nice when one era leads to another. Mm-hmm. And you see these next lot of playing and they experience things for the first time. And, yeah, no, it's nice to see.
But again, the other end of the extreme, my goodness me, Nadal's record at Roland Garros. I've scratched my head for a long time and I simply cannot think, across all sports, all generations, a man with such singular dominance at an individual venue, arena. And I don't want that to distract from him because, again, 20 slams across the board, he has the Grand Slam. But my goodness me, in Paris, I simply cannot think of another sporting individual who can hold a eye-to-eye conversation as the most superior force at a given venue. I mean, it's absolutely astonishing, isn't it? And consistent over 15-plus years now.
Yeah, and I think this year was different as well, wasn't it? You know, playing in sort of in October when it's much heavier. Because, you know, Nadal's lost before on the clay, not the French so much, but he's lost in Madrid and he's lost in some of the other events where the conditions are a bit different and a bit heavier. So this year, that, you know, what with Nadal not playing that much this year, Djokovic having played, plus the sort of, you know, Nadal was not complaining, but he was saying the I think they used Wilson balls that are heavier and slightly bigger, and then the conditions being heavier, Nadal's really heavy spin wouldn't kick up so much and cause opponents such issues. But if anything, it was more dominant than usual. So that just shows how great he is, you know, when he's dealing with these sort of different circumstances.
Didn't drop a set. I think that's the fourth time in his, you know, dominance in Paris where he's gone through the whole tournament without dropping a set. Truly astonishing. Always, I want to give a word to Djokovic, who, again, had only lost that one match, and even that was by a disqualification before this, having a real stellar 2020. He's always, I feel, a slightly the forgotten man in the quote-unquote GOAT debate, which usually goes for Federer versus Nadal, both of whom equal now on 20 slams. Djokovic, though, had he won, would have moved up to 18. He still has in the locker 17 and has age on his side, only 33. Nadal, obviously, Djokovic pushing for Federer pushing 40. So he has that element. I'm still convinced, John, that when it's all said and done, it will be the Serb who has, at least in terms of the number of slams, that rides at the top of that list as the winningest. What's your thoughts briefly on Djokovic?
Yeah, I actually agree because, you know, I think Federer, he's either 39 or 40 this year or this and next year. So, you know, you have to realistically look at that. So then if you look at Nadal and Djokovic, Nadal outside of the French Open hasn't, I don't think he's won a slam outside of the French for a couple of years now. So then it leaves hard courts and grass. And that's, I think, you know, I would slightly favour Djokovic on those surfaces. Plus, I think Nadal's 34, and I think Djokovic is, what is he, 32, is he, this sort of thing?
Yeah, I think Nadal 34, Djokovic 33, but the thing is, I mean, Nadal has put his body through such torment. Yeah. that, again, it was imperious efforts in France just this very weekend. But something in me feels like he hasn't actually got physically that much left at the highest level. And I could almost see when he has, if he does go on to surpass Federer's record, he may just kind of just to provide for longer fulfillment of life back away. I certainly think Djokovic does have that element of father time on his side at the moment.
Yeah, you know, I agree. I mean, Nadal's definitely, he's had more injuries throughout his career as well, hasn't he? Knee injuries and so on. So I think, you know, he's had more wars, as it were, in boxing terminology. You know, he's sort of a little bit more battle-worn, I suppose. So I think, you know, you can see him doing well at the French, can't you? But then, like I say, he has a habit of surprising people, doesn't
Absolutely.
He, really? Yeah, no, it is interesting. It'd be interesting what happens next year, whether, you know, the Australian Open is on, whether they'll, you know, go and probably, I'd imagine, play without a crowd, whether the French Open will be on in the same time, you know, the normal time. Wimbledon, I think, have said that they will go ahead with or without a crowd. So be interesting to see what happens, for sure.
Absolutely. But what an era of tennis generally it has been, but certainly men's tennis. Nadal's victory at the weekend over Djokovic meant that he claimed his historic 100th win, only two defeats at Roland Garros, and he became the oldest champion in Paris since Andre Giemo back in 1972. What an effort. Got to ask you, John, where do you currently stand on the epic debate, which is terribly subjective, GOAT, greatest of all time? I am still leading Federer, but maybe just because I just love his aesthetic of his play as well as the quantity of his victories. But Nadal's 13 at Roland Garros, plus, of course, equaling Fed, means that he's got to be in contention. And as we say, I think Djokovic bubbling away under the surface. For you, John, the GOAT, yeah, right now.
Well, you know what? I should have done my research, because I think if you look at it, there was an article on the BBC website, I think, earlier in the week. And if you look at it, you have to look at who's finished the year world number one as well, more often. And I can't tell you the exact answer of that. Who's won more ATP Tour finals, the end of year finals? So there's more than just the Grand Slam argument.
Absolutely.
So, you know, so I think that's debatable still. I'd have to look at that. If people wanted to find out, that was, you know, you'd look at Masters series. So they're under the Slams, they're the biggest events, and see. And also, even looking at their Slams, so if, you know, Nadal's 13 are in one event, you know, how well spread, you know, Federer's are. I think, I know he's dominated Wimbledon probably 7 or 8 times. He's got one French Open, hasn't he? I don't know how many Wimbledons Nadal has got off the top of my head, but these are the sort of things the sort of tennis bookworms would do, I think.
It's fascinating to the again, it is more nuanced than all that, and everybody's got an opinion on this. I think Federer wins in terms of the longest amount of time at number one. Again, fascinating debate there. As you say, Fed's 8 at Wimbledon, but he has spread it across. You know, Nadal's largely has been Roland Garros dominated. I think Djokovic has 8 also at Australia, so there, his level of dominance. But again, yeah, for me, just aesthetically, I still come down on the side of Federer. I think he's just a work of art to watch that guy play tennis. But
yeah,
I want to say that if you look at their record against one another, it is, again, the Serb, Djokovic, who has a superior record overall against these three absolute icons of their sport. So, once again, he's kind of forgotten, the forgotten man at the moment. But there is certainly a case to be made that GOAT is Djokovic. And I think one day that may be a fascinating conversation.
Yeah, and I think he's been the most dominant in recent years as well. So, that would, you know, I think if you watch tennis over the last 10 years, you look at the general speed and the general level of play. It's gone up certainly in the last 2 or 3 years, it's gone up a notch again. There are videos on Facebook and so on. When you see Federer winning his slams at the start of his career, you can even see on the TV or even on the phone that the general pace of the ball is slower then than it is now. So I personally think Djokovic took it to pretty much superhuman levels on the hard courts. And the hard courts are actually the you know, that's the quickest surface now. So the old stereotype was grass was the fastest, but it's actually not. It's, they slowed it down in 2001. And when you watch Wimbledon and then a few, you know, number of weeks later, watch the US Open, the US Open's quicker than Wimbledon.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Djokovic, in terms of the hard courts, took it on to, you know, levels where they're playing tennis just like table tennis. It's that quick. I mean, it's been incredible.
We have been privileged, though, haven't we? I mean, goodness me, these three have really brought the best out of each other as well. And there's not, sometimes sporting rivalries, there's that kind of vitriol, that kind of tension. Whilst they very much have that, at least in terms of on the court, off it, there is such massive mutual respect. And they have really, I think, as a triumvirate, whichever way you fall as to your personal opinion of the greatest, of the era at the least, you know, they've all done an amazing amount of joy for the game of tennis, and I think
elevates
global consciousness, which is fabulous. Really appreciate your input. Just real quickly, John, any news in terms of Batchwood that you could quickly share?
So Batchwood, we're pretty much at half term, the first term back since coronavirus. Things are going pretty well. The opening hours are slightly later now, until 9 o'clock, I think, four nights a week, which is helping. You know, as I said before, we've got sort of 13 regional players full-time training in this new system. Mm-hmm. And we're just sort of bedding in and getting all the sort of values done and working hard and, seeing where it takes us.
Perfect, John. Really appreciate your time as always. Just in closing, can you give us the website or the best way to find out more about Batchwood Online?
Yes. So there's a Facebook page. That's quite good because I answer those messages 24/7. So that's, you know, support Batchwood Tennis and Golf. That's on the Facebook page. And then there's the onelife.co.uk website. And